Hey, welcome to Infill, where we chat housing politics and policy. I'm Laura Clark with Yimby Action. First, today, we are going to hear an interview with Nick Josefowicz. He is the candidate that we have endorsed for District 2, and he's going to talk a lot about how we know Nick, really, his work on AB 2923, and also his bigger views on housing policy and why we're such big supporters of his. Then we're going to hear from Janice Lee, who is actually running to replace Nick on the BART board. Transportation is really important. Obviously, AB 2923 is a good example of how we can get more housing built on transit stops. And Janice talks about her perspective on getting the whole transit agency working better and getting more housing throughout that system. And then in order to sort of tie it all into a bow, we are going to hear from Sam Moss of Mission Housing and Brian Hanlon of California YIMBY. The three of us are going to chat about state bills, the rubber meeting the road sometimes, what that messily looks like, and all the work YIMBYs have been doing to try and get better housing policy passed statewide. And so with that, we'll start our interview with Nick. Hey, Nick.
Hello.
So we endorsed Nick Josefowicz very easily for supervisor for District 2, which is the Marina, Cow Hollow. Nick, list off the neighborhoods.
It basically goes from Russian Hill to Seacliff and includes the neighborhoods in between.
And Nick, you've been a member of the BART board for a while. You've been an advocate. You helped write David Chu, Assemblymember David Chu's AB 2923. Talk a bit about kind of what's motivating you to get out here and run for supervisor.
So, you know, I live in Pacific Heights with my wife and my twin boys, Ben and Alec. They're 2.5 years old. They just started a preschool last week. Very exciting moment. They survived their first day of preschool. And, you know, we're just really grateful to be raising our kids in this fabulous community. But we're also so frustrated that City Hall has made a bunch of bad decisions, which has meant that we have the highest rate of street homelessness in the country, that it's the most expensive place to live in the country, that it's just so difficult for people to get around, get to work, get to see their family. And, you know, it really feels like we're a wealthy city, we're a talented city, we're a compassionate city. We just got to do better than that. And that's really why I'm running for supervisor, to do better.
So housing is obviously our number one issue, and I know it's something near and dear to your heart. And I know you helped write AB 2923, which a lot of YIMBYs, you know, wrote letters of support about. Talk to us about kind of that bill and helping push it across the finish line.
So first of all, if you did write a letter of support, thank you. Like, it makes a really big difference. You know, so I've been on the BART board for 3 years, and, you know, it's a system that as a region, we've spent over $10 billion building. And it provides incredible mobility to the folks who live nearby. And when I got on the board, BART didn't really have a big focus on building housing and especially affordable housing around its stations. It has over 250 acres of parking lots, and it wasn't doing much with them.
Can we say that a little louder? It has how many acres of parking lots?
250 acres of surface parking lots.
For a transit system. Okay, continue.
And this is some of the most, this is some of the best places to put new housing that's affordable to working families in the whole of California. And so we started working at BART and we passed a transit-oriented development policy, a TOD policy, which kind of committed BART to being more aggressive about building housing on the land that it owns and about helping to build communities out more sort of beyond that as well. We hired a new head of real estate who came from Redwood City, which has done amazing work in its downtown, and who was just, you know, willing to be much more of a change maker on that. We sort of really, really prioritized it in the organization. But pretty quickly, we sort of started to realize that there were a lot of local communities who were just really happy with the status quo, that they didn't want to build any new housing in their community. They just wanted a BART station with a lot of parking. And That's not okay anymore in 2018 in the Bay Area. And so I reached out to David Chu and sort of brought to him this problem and a bill which would really catalyze the construction of over 30,000 new units of housing around in the immediate vicinity of BART stations, 10,000 of which are going to be subsidized affordable. And it would, taken together, be by far and away the largest development project in the Bay Area, the most amount of new housing that gets built, and frankly, in the absolute best place to build that new housing in the Bay Area.
And then it passed.
Well, and then it passed. And then, you know, blood, sweat, tears, sacred honor, all that business. And
just sailed through. No one came out and opposed it. And yeah.
And, you know, it was, you know, first of all, I you got to give an enormous amount of credit to Assemblymember David Chu. I mean, he is just very good at his job. And sometimes we just kind of think about elected officials, public servants, in terms of what they believe. But the more time you spend trying to get things done, you realize that one of the big differentiators is not just what you believe, but how good you are at your job and how you can get things done. And it just kind of makes sense when someone spells it out like that. And David Chu is just really good at his job. And then, you know, we, the YIMBY movement all across the Bay Area and Sacramento made a huge difference to being able to get this through. The Cal Matters, a sort of a news outlet that, similar to Infill, a news outlet that covers Sacramento, called AB 2923 the biggest housing bill that passed out of the legislature this year. And it required a huge amount of kind of collective push and a lot of kind of thoughtful negotiating. And it got out of the legislature and now it's sitting on the governor's desk.
And it was very exciting. And we're so thrilled to have somebody. I think having watched you work for a while, I see you as somebody who can really whip the Board of Supervisors into shape and bring forward more serious legislation. I think there's kind of been a lot of unseriousness at the Board of Supervisors for a long time. People putting forward, you know, resolutions to fight Trump, and you're like, okay, cool. Like, what is that actually doing? How are you actually making our community work better and making our government work better for the people? And I do think that you bring that kind of hunger to the job that I'm really excited about.
You know, I think one just has to focus on the big important issues that matter to people and that are going to make have a big impact on their lives. Like, there's only so much that one can do in any job, whether it's, you know, in the private sector, working at a company, or in the public sector. And if you don't focus on the issues that matter, you're not going to make progress on the issues that matter. And I'm really excited to try and get on the Board of Supervisors and really refocus city government, which is a big place, right? It spends $11 billion a year. It's over 35,000 people that work there. I'm really excited to sort of refocus this aircraft carrier on the issues that are going to really improve people's lives, whether that's housing affordability or transportation improvements, or, you know, really getting to grips with street homelessness.
So you've listed kind of the core issues for your campaign. You know, if you want to talk more about the core issues of your campaign or kind of how it's all going, and I really want to encourage people to get out there and canvass. So if you want to talk about the importance of door knocking, especially in District 2.
So, you know, the last election was won by a handful of votes, right? And these district elections, there are not a lot of people that vote, and every vote really makes a difference. And, you know, I didn't think that used to be true in sort of larger, you know, kind of national elections. But then my wife, who grew up in South Florida, constantly reminds me that that's also true in other elections, that, like, votes do matter, especially when they're hanging. And so, you know, the most powerful thing that you can do is go out and talk to other people in your community, voters in District 2, about the kind of the change that we expect to see in our communities, and how these problems are not problems that we just have to accept as the inevitable consequences of living in San Francisco. These are problems that we can actually do something about. And so that's knocking on doors. And if you'd like to come every weekend at noon, you can come to our office at 1782 Union Street. We'll have it ready for you. We use a great app to make it really easy for you to canvass. Or if you want to reach out to the campaign on Twitter or Facebook or by email at nickj@nickjosefowicz.com, if you can spell that. And we can set you up to do some digital canvassing as well. We have a really great app that we use, which identifies who are the people that you know who live in District 2, and allows you to message them individually. And it's really, you know, every little bit can be a difference maker.
Yeah, definitely. And I want to remind all of our listeners to share the YIMBY endorsements with all of their friends and family. Put the YIMBY endorsements in front of people. You are the greatest validator for explaining to people why this election matters. Hopefully you've heard something inspiring. Nick, say something else inspiring.
You know, I'm a bit too nerdy to just be able to kind of inspire on cue.
No, inspire nerds with statistics.
So the latest information is that across the region since 2010, there were about 770,000 new jobs that were created and less than 150,000 new housing units that were built. That's hot off the press this morning. And it's no surprise to anybody, right? And that's why in San Francisco, you need to, you know, earn $303,000 a year to just be able to afford the medium priced home, right? That's not just out of reach for teachers, that's out of reach for lawyers. And you know, pretty soon it's going to be out of reach for bankers. And like, I mean, it's just not okay. And we can't let it continue. And, you know, I'm out canvassing every morning at bus stops. And every week I bump into people. And I'm like, are you going to vote in November? And I'm all chirpy at 8 in the morning, you know, wagging my tail. You going to vote in November? And they're like, no, man, I'm moving to Denver, right? And it's like, why are you moving to Denver? He's like, I can't afford to live here, right? I can't afford to raise a family here. And I'm like, oh, that's we got to change that, right? Like, we got to make it affordable for people to be able to stay in the communities where they want to be and raise their kids here and retire here. And the reason it's not affordable is because decisions that we've kind of collectively made, and that's what's really sad about it. But what's inspiring about it, hopefully, right, Laura?
Yes.
What's inspiring about it is that we can do something about it. We can make our region and our city and our communities a more affordable place.
By building housing and other things.
And by electing people who are going to do that.
Yes. And mm-hmm. electing people fundamentally who have the stomach and the will and the drive to do it. Because, you know, people who are doing a hand wave at placating the now extremely strong pro-housing movement is just not going to cut it anymore. We need people who are going to be real fighters in the trenches and who are going to work to make sure that we're passing genuinely pro-housing legislation. And so with that, thank you so much for coming and chatting with us, Nick.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for all your good work. You know, it's really the collective power of people coming together on issues that really matter to them that sort of changes the outcomes in our communities. So keep on doing that.
So thank you so much to Nick for coming out and chatting with us, and especially about the importance of BART. And now we are going to hear from hopefully future BART board director, Janice Lee. Thank you so much for coming, Janice.
Yeah. Hey, everyone.
So Janice, you're running on the west side for BART director mostly, except the district. Can you like describe all the different neighborhoods that
yeah.
it's a big area?
Yeah. So maybe just start off with a little bit of BART 101. BART is weird. Just like everything in the Bay Area needs to be just a little bit special, so is BART. It was a special district created by the state law in the 60s, and three counties bought in. Famously, Marin was like, thanks, but no thanks. So we got San Francisco County, Alameda County, and Contra Costa County all buying into the governance and into the system. And the three counties were highly gerrymandered into nine districts. And so there are nine seats. San Francisco is mostly broken up into two seats, although there's a little portion of a seat that really spreads out into East Bay. That's Latifah Simon's seat. Where the actual BART system is, that's BART District 9, and that's Bevin Dufty's seat. So he has, you know, most of the stations in San Francisco, all of the Mission, and really the core of the city. And then BART District 8 is weird. It includes Embarcadero, Montgomery BART stations, as well as Balboa Park. And then it sort of swings this huge crescent C around the city. So it includes, you know, the areas right next to Embarcadero, Montgomery BART, Financial District, Chinatown. But then it includes all of Pack Heights, the Marina, Presidio, and then swings all the way around through the Richmond, through the Outer Sunset. and then through, you know, Lake Merced, and then includes Ingleside, and then it swings through Balboa Park and includes a little bit of Crocker Amazon, and then Viz Valley and Little Hollywood, which is the weirdest district you could probably paint.
Yeah, I mean, it must be really interesting to kind of bring one message to all of those different communities, many of whom don't actually have a BART station in their district.
Yes. So I think in terms of like even just engaging the constituency, the first is just, hey, did you know you are represented on the BART board? And did you know you actually pay into the system whether you use it or not? And then the second thing is that it's really more than just BART. For me, it is really about mobility and this question of how we are able to get around, because BART is just one major people mover, but it's not certainly the only people mover. And when BART doesn't work, the entire region grinds to a halt. When Muni has its meltdowns, you know, I was just yesterday trying to, you know, be all transit week. And when we saw that first crack in the Transbay terminal, I was trying to get on 38 Geary, and guess what? I couldn't get on 38 Geary because there were just no buses coming. So like when Muni or when BART comes to halt, the entire city and the entire region comes to halt. So we all pay those impacts, whether you're actually riding BART every single day or not.
So talk to me about kind of, BART has lots of problems. Mm-hmm. You know, it's also a massive transit agency that moves a lot of people successfully around the Bay Area every day. Mm-hmm. What do you see bringing, you know, what's the big change that you want to bring, and what's something that you think you want to keep a good thing going?
Yeah. I think my vision is really simple. It's on all of my flyers. It's why I say every single time, because it is really that simple. I think BART should be a safe, reliable transit system that really puts people and our communities first. I've romanticized transit a lot, and I think it's a way I romanticize cities. I love cities. I love living in cities. I think a lot of millennials like me, I'm young, I'm 31. I've only lived in cities as an adult. There's something really beautiful about cities, about finding difference and finding community and finding space for yourself and finding space that is, you know, incongruent with yourself. But there's something sort of amazing about that tension and that conflict. And I think that a lot of millennials, a lot of young folks are seeking to be in cities because they want to eat the food that they want to eat. They want to date the people that they want to date. They want to live in different neighborhoods and be able to have all these different experiences that you wouldn't in sort of the homogeneity of a suburb. And for me, that ugly beauty, beautiful ugliness is actually present on public transit. When you think about all the different lives and different lived experiences in a city, you sort of all shove them into a BART train, and you see that, and it's something really beautiful. And so for me, I really see public transit as a lifeblood of a city, and it is the symbol and representation of what I really love about cities. And I think there's something to be preserved about that. And I think that there's something to be nurtured there. And for me, you know, as much as BART breaks down, as much as I have to smell shit and piss, you know, in a BART station, as much as I'm like getting quoted in the Chronicle because of my Muni meltdown stories, I still love public transit. I believe in public transit because I believe in the importance they have in cities.
Yeah, I mean, I hear a lot from people, especially when they're fighting against housing, saying, well, we can't build the housing until the transit works better. And I think, you know, you've touched on like, we need more people using transit is mm-hmm. like how we get more people invested in the system. We need it to get better. We have to walk and chew gum. We have to do housing. And these things go together.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering, you know, how you feel about, especially in the outlying places where BART touches mm-hmm. that really, you know, I don't know, it seemed to be getting a huge, massive public investment and not doing a lot about the housing needs of the region.
Yeah. I mean, in YIMBY terminology, I am a both and person. That's certainly how I feel about housing, and certainly how I feel about transportation. And if you just like back up and look at costs, when you look at household costs, number one is housing and number two is transportation. They're very intertwined because where you are able to work and where you're able to live and where you go to school or where your kids go to school or where you shop, where you eat, depends on how you're able to get around.
One of the things that I think, you know, we need to think about the BART a little bit strategically is the people who represent kind of the inner core, and kind of not versus, but bringing balance to some of the BART directors who are representing some of the further out districts. You know, you know, we're going to need you, frankly, to be fighting to allow BART to build housing. Yeah. Thanks to AB 2923, BART still has to make the decision to build housing on those parking lots.
Yeah, I'm not going to name names, but there's maybe someone who's been serving on the BART board for maybe like 24 years. He might live in Brentwood and he just loves his surface parking lots. And honestly, you know, if you talk to someone like Nate Josefowicz, he serves obviously on the BART board now, but also on MTC, which covers all nine Bay Area counties. He'll tell you some, you know, he has like battle scars and like war stories about the battles taken on like the folks up in Solano County. You talk to David Chu and, you know, I think David Chu has had a really fascinating journey through politics. And, you know, he's seen as a straight up communist in Sacramento. And, you know what David Chu looks like in San Francisco? It's a little bit different. And it's really hard. How do you sort of bring together different sides? So, you know, I really respect the leadership of Assemblymember Chu in putting forward. And I know that this bill was really shoved forward, also by Nick himself, of Assembly Bill 2923. So what AB 2923 does is that, I'm going to shortcut a little bit.
So we talked about it with Nick too. So okay, you can shortcut even more.
Okay, so I'm not even going to, y'all heard from Nick about what AB 2923 is. But it really gives more control to BART to do what they want on their land rather than have to be beholden to, I don't know, the 50 or so jurisdictions where their BART stations are. And, you know, they own somewhere between 200 to even 300 acres of land. About 95% of that is surface parking lots. BART doesn't want surface parking lots. They want to better utilize their land in housing and other development. And so at first, when I was looking at AB 2923, I called up David. And I was like, hey, you know, David, we've worked on a lot of things together. I'm letting you know I'm running for BART board. Great. Hey, I want to talk to you about AB 2923 because I think 20% affordable housing is way too low. And, you know, we have this conversation. He's like, well, you've got to understand 20% is abysmal in a place like San Francisco. But talking about 20% in Castro Valley, in Walnut Creek, they're throwing a fit. And that's what happened earlier this week. There was a press conference with, you know, I don't know, a dozen, couple dozen folks in the suburban parts of where BART goes to. And they're throwing a fit because they're like, how dare you make us build housing? And, you know, we're just like crying here, like I'm like in my Outer Sunset ADU, just like weeping. I'm like, but my housing. You know, and it's tough because you're dealing with very, very different jurisdictions that don't quite get, you know, San Francisco needs in the same way. So how do you pull people together? So certainly political leadership, and please, Governor Brown, maybe by the time this airs, you'll have signed AB 2923. And I think ultimately this is going to be a huge question of what BART is going to do and the kind of leadership we have on the BART board to actually hold the agency to developing their land according to these new land use controls and standards. I think that really this bill sets the baseline and then sets some targets for where BART needs to be, but it does not lay out the framework. It does not lay out the process. And I think that's really where the true fights are going to be and, you know, what the development processes looks like. And then, you know, let's, you know, what actually land, you know, BART owned land looks like in San Francisco is radically different.
So part of this kind of converting parking lots into different kinds of space, building housing on those spaces, there's also a big push for this kind of multimodal approach to moving about cities and the region in general. And I'm wondering kind of as bike share becomes a bigger part of what we're doing, as we're just doing this big push to get people out of their cars, how does that interact with BART and where are you thinking you need to bring it next?
One idea I have is that BART could bring back buses. So back in the day, BART actually used to run buses before they were all the way out to Bay Point, to Pittsburgh, now to Antioch. They would actually run buses from, you know, as far as their line had been built out to all the way out to Antioch. And if you know how Amtrak works, you know, they have their throughway bus service as well to actually get them to get folks to Amtrak stations. So one idea I have is to bring back buses. And what if we ran BART buses, or I don't know, you know, but BART would buy into this. They would run buses from San Rafael Transit Center, where we've got smart trains, we've got ferry service, and, you know, the bus would just, you know, go with me here. It would run down Golden Gate Bridge, maybe make a stop or two up in Marin, and then run along the real west side, the really outer avenues of San Francisco, maybe stop once or twice in outer Richmond, once or twice in outer Sunset, and then end up in Daly City to maybe even go as far as Millbrae to really build out the connection for folks. I think that would be huge. When we talk about new mobility options, I have two thoughts. I think that new mobility options are really great, and I think that they are opening up more ways for people to get around and creating new trips and, you know, allowing folks to go to different places that they wouldn't have otherwise been able to. But these options all need to be truly affordable and accessible. If they're only targeting really a particular population and not serving all neighborhoods or serving only wealthy neighborhoods or only serving neighborhoods that are already really well served by public transit, that's not right. And we need to make sure that those systems are really working for folks. Again, I'm speaking as an Outer Sunset resident that will not see bike share for any foreseeable future, even though I've got, you know, my jump credits and I am an annual Ford Go Bike member. I think that these things all have to and must coexist. And that is really the question of, like, how do these systems complement each other?
Hey, man, something you've been talking a little bit about is this regionalism problem. We have 28 or 31 different public transportation systems in the region. And BART is one of the few that actually connects a lot of different regions, mm-hmm. rather than having this fragmented, everybody has their own little pissant little bus system that doesn't talk to anything else. And I do see it as this major weak point in all of our transit agencies is that mm-hmm. they haven't prioritized talking to one another.
Yeah. And I think that a lot of this has to do with the structure of our government. So, I mean, if I told you there was truly a regional planning organization that was supposed to be doing this integration, that is supposed to be setting policies and enforcing those policies around land use, around housing, around transportation, people would be like, shut the fuck up. What are you talking about? Guess what exists? And it's called the Metropolitan Transportation Commission. It represents all 9 Bay Area counties. It receives, I asked Nick today, he said it has like over $1 billion in annual funding because they're a pass-through at the federal and state level. And they don't do anything. I mean,
I've been to MTC ABAG meetings, and they are fascinating for the virtue signaling and nothingness.
Yeah, and this is why we have Scott Wiener pushing for SB 827. This is why we have David Chu pushing through AB 2923. And, like, I don't think that, you know, I don't think that these bills are perfect in any way, but we have to shove sort of, you know, the kid toy, you know, the square into the circle hole. And they're like imperfect tools because our regional planning tool is not doing its job. And so I think that, you know, what I have been really impressed by with Nick is the leadership that he has brought regionally in, you know, being on the MTC and really pushing force on these regional conversations and working with Spur and other folks about what can we do. I think that we need to rethink regional governance. I think we need to do it for two reasons. I think we need an actual effective body that can truly prioritize our urgent pressing needs, which I think, you know, we feel the crunch in our three major cities, Oakland, San Jose, and San Francisco. We have to make sure that our leadership is prioritizing the needs there. I heard a statistic today that 70% of Bay Area transit trips either start or end in San Francisco. We need the attention put here, and we need to have the tools and the policies and resources put here. I think the second thing is, I don't think we should just get back to state of good repair. I have a dream that we could have amazing, high-quality, world-class, beautiful, seamless transit across the entire Bay Area. we're going to have to be creative in how we fund it. And I do not have any hope that our current governance structure will be able to help us fund those dreams and execute on those dreams. I had a very painful experience being very deeply involved in Regional Measure 3. And while, you know, if I had to grade it, I would give it maybe like a C plus in the end. I supported it. I fought hard for it. But I saw so much money, millions and millions of dollars poured out to Solano County and, you know, like deep Contra Costa County freeway and highway projects. And if that's what Regional Measure 3 looks like, I have concerns, you know, whether we'd be able to get to this beautiful regional creative measure that could fund our true dreams.
I mean, I just think we need people like you who are determined to say we have to do it. I mean, I don't know why there's so many people in our bureaucracy who spend a lot of time talking about how, well, it's been this way for a really long time and you have to understand the bureaucracy is this way and you have to understand that's really hard and la, la, la. I'm like, you know, like this, we've gone to the moon. Like these are just institutions that we made up, and human beings are capable of deciding to do things in a different way. And we can think big. We did bring down a freeway once. Yeah. We can do it twice. Again. Yeah. Last question is pivoting to getting excited about the campaign. BART, as you talked about, is kind of a down ballot thing. So relying a lot on endorsements and people talking to their friends about this. What do you think the best way for people to plug in with your campaign is?
Yeah, I am a first-time candidate. I'm running against a lot of people who are not first-time candidates. And this is true grassroots campaign. I am almost entirely volunteer run, and I would love to have you as a volunteer. If you go to my website, janice.lee, you will be able to find all different ways to get involved. I would love to have you as a volunteer. Go to janice.lee/volunteer because I am going to be mobilizing every weekend. I have so many really fun events coming up, and I would love to meet you at all of them. And then certainly social media. You know, there was a point in my life, maybe for 1 minute, I really wanted to become an Instagram star. I wanted to become a social media influencer. That is not planned out, you know, played out how I hoped. But you can still follow me on social media. So I'm on Twitter at Janice4Bart. So follow me there and stay in the loop on everything.
And for all of, you know, I'm saying this for everybody we're talking to, share out the YIMBY endorsements, share out this podcast. Let your friends know why you care about these issues. And your voice is the most powerful thing when it comes to moving votes. You might not think this, but your friends sort of respect your opinion. And so you putting the endorsements in their hands when they are getting those ballots and they're looking at a giant effing ballot and not knowing what to do with it, you're a helpful friend, a voice in the dark. So when we spoke with Janice, we did not know that, I mean, we were pretty confident. I'll be honest. Like, you know, I didn't think Jerry Brown was going to let us down, but we did not know that AB 2923 was going to be signed for sure. And so now we get to revel in the glow. Brian and Sam, how much reveling are we doing?
Well, I celebrated the night of the bill signing. I tried to get other folks to come on down to
get the last minute.
Sam was mocking my choice of celebratory venue. So I think we'll find one more to his liking later.
Thank you.
I appreciate that. A little bit.
Wine bar on a Sunday. But there's nothing wrong with that. Not that there's anything wrong.
So, you know, AB 2923 was one of the bills that was sort of one of the junior housing bills, but ended up being kind of the most significant, unfortunately, passed this year. But it was a really major step forward for saying we're going to get housing built on transit. And I'm wondering kind of, you know, your perspective from the state level, what we can hope for next year and why we should really be celebrating these victories.
Yeah, well, one thing, I wouldn't characterize it as a junior bill. And I think you can tell that based on the enormity of opposition in the Capitol against that, right? You had Catherine Baker on the floor and Steve Glazer, the senator from the further reaches of the East Bay, declaring it was his number one priority to kill the bill. Thankfully, Senator Glazer was unable to do so. But I think that's because everyone recognized that if this bill passes, then something like SB 827, a much more sweeping transformation, is more likely to occur next year. So it really puts us in a great place for going big in 2019.
So just for the listener out there, what exactly did AB 2923 accomplish?
Well, so it allows this really radical thing of allowing homes near train stations, something that we used to do a lot of in this country and do throughout the world. So this bill will allow the BART to set transit-oriented development standards on parking lots it owns in certain areas, if those areas have a representative on the BART board. So unfortunately, it doesn't apply to San Mateo or Santa Clara County. There are a lot of restrictions here. They can't say we are going to go, you know, Kowloon walled city style in Arinda. They're only permitted to set design standards that exceed one floor above the neighboring area. That said, the AB 2923 can be stacked on top of existing state density bonus law. So we can really get a lot of homes, and they're estimating that, they'll be able to hit around 20,000 homes.
All in Arinda.
Commercial. If only.
All I heard there was that we need to start working hard to get Santa Clara County and San Mateo County represented in order to backdoor housing in those counties. I think that that is definitely, they need representation. I demand that they have representation.
That's probably one of the most important accomplishments of the 2923 passing, that all of us know now that they don't have representation.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
So, but part of that deal was struck that, so there's an idea in California that local control is sacrosanct. Whatever agency approves housing needs to have a locally elected representative. So right now, the BART board doesn't have elected representatives from San Mateo and Santa Clara County, so that's why it doesn't apply to those areas. That said, I certainly agree with Senator Scott Wiener that local control is not biblical. It was not passed down on clay tablets, and we should be able to also permit home building at a higher level of governance.
I think, you know, what you spoke about of layering the laws on top of one another, we're going to see a lot more. We've had this web of bad laws holding us back, and now we're sort of turning and being able to stack good laws on top of each other in order to get, you know, better outcomes. And one of them is the Strengthening the Housing Accountability Act, which hopefully puts a little bit more power behind the pro-housing bills that we're passing. The Housing Accountability Act means that when someone proposes a zoning compliant project, it basically should have to be approved. It doesn't work that way quite yet. We're going to need a few more lawsuits in order to throw some elbows. But it is kind of exciting to say that BART as an institution will be able to propose housing. And if another municipality denies it, I don't know, like, would BART sue?
It actually becomes a ministerial process at that point. So if a local government doesn't adopt standards in accordance with the TOD proposals within 2 years, then BART just gets to do it. But I think you made a really good point about these laws stacking on top that are a good thing. The NIMBYs figured out decades ago how to have, like, these interlocking web of laws that sounded good but actually conspired to thwart home building, and the YIMBYs have finally gotten wise to this. And so we're making inroads there now.
Because we're getting older.
Yeah, like, that is like true. We are getting older.
The older you get, the more diabolical, apparently, that you get.
The more desperate for, I would like to procreate at some point.
Just build,
like,
some
where
goddamn
is
housing.
Yeah. I just came actually from a hearing that was the first Home SF project that's been proposed in San Francisco. So we have a statewide density bonus that we've talked about some on the program. And the statewide density is supposed to be a floor that then local municipalities are supposed to be able to pass a local version if they want. It's one of these sort of like, we'll give you your local control, but we're going to set some statewide minimums. And so San Francisco was like, okay, we'll pass a local density bonus. That ended up being a little bit too constraining. So we've seen one Home SF project be proposed. And currently, it's up at the Board of Supervisors, and there's a guy saying that you shouldn't build it because it'll block his views. And it makes me sort of feel like, okay, even when we pass all of these interlocking laws, you know, there's going to have to be this whole cultural shift about how we make decisions and what people feel entitled to.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And if you look at this great study that came out recently from some professors at Boston University that tried to quantitatively analyze, like, who shows up to these meetings and what do they say? And what you find is that, surprise, surprise, the people who show up to these meetings, they tend to be older, whiter homeowners, and they overwhelmingly oppose the projects that they're speaking on, even in communities that are very pro-housing, even pro-affordable housing. So I think it's time that we start to think about, well, maybe we should not make a fetish a process and start focusing on the end that we all want to see.
Yeah, I mean, also, though, I think it's important. You know, Home SF was hard to pass. It took a lot of YIMBYs and other groups coming together. We passed it. Like, it's important not to assume that any one thing is just going to, like, be earth-shattering. You know, we've had decades, generations of the opposite of bad bills and laws being passed. So we're just getting started.
No, and I'm excited about, you know, Home SF is not working the way it should, but it sets the precedent of we should pass laws like this that do work. And so now there's this idea that, like, okay, we're going to have to fix Home SF because we passed it with the intention of it working. And so therefore, if it's not working, it's a capital P problem. And so therefore, there's appetite at the legislature to fix it. That is a totally different mentality than we had 2 years ago.
So that, and that's, I think that's a great segue into AB 3194, the bill this year that strengthened the Housing Accountability Act. I'm sure our regular listeners know this is a bill that's near and dear to YIMBY hearts. It formed the basis of the Carla lawsuit against Lafayette and the lawsuit against Berkeley and Sausalito and many more suits to come. This bill builds upon SB 167, we worked on last year, but it closes some pretty key loopholes. And it states that if you submit a proposal to build housing and it complies with the objective general plan, then you get to do it. It doesn't need to comply with the specificities of the underlying zoning, because what happened is these local governments would you know, change their housing element, which is part of the general plan because they're required to do so. And then they would just, you know, not get around to changing their zoning. And then say, oh, no, you require a rezoning in order to get this built. So we just fixed that last this year. And there's also a like health and safety like loophole that was also hopefully closed, which states that you can't just say, oh, if we build housing, then there will be more cars and with that, there was more ambient air pollution, and so the asthma rates will go up or something like that. It says that, no, like, there needs to be, like, an actual, real, serious health and safety concern, not a routine concern with just more people living in an area.
This is where we're going to have to end up fixing so much of CEQA. I mean, there are so many bullshit, fake environmental arguments used against infill housing, and it's painful to watch. I mean, the whole thing that we've been seeing with in San Francisco, the Central SoMa project, there's one piece of housing that these condo owners are declaring that will cause cancer. And it's like, every time it comes up, I'm like, and they're saying with such a straight face, they get up there and they like sob that if we build this housing near their housing, it will give them all cancer. And I'm just like, you cannot possibly believe the nonsense that you are spouting. And yet CEQA gives you this leverage to try and bash everyone over the head with and sue for your fake cancer claims.
I don't know why you were trying to disempower rich Stanford business professors that own penthouses in SoMa. What?
That's exactly what CEQA was invented for, actually.
And he also has, we think, a like $4 million house in Berkeley that he could retreat to if he is so concerned about the cancer risk.
But I mean, if the building's 20 feet lower, then there's no cancer risk.
The mid-rise option doesn't cause cancer. Duh.
Cancer only happens at 150 feet in the air.
Oh my God, it's so infuriating. I mean, and some of this stuff is based on, you know, old ways of doing vehicle miles traveled versus, I mean, all of this stuff, it gets really wonky really quickly when you're doing these fake environmental studies required by CEQA. And like, we know how to be better environmentalists now. Like, we passed a shitty law in the 70s. Please let us fix it.
Right. And that's the same thing with local control. Like you're saying, it wasn't passed down on tablets. Like, you know, we passed a law, Prop 13, CEQA, they were passed a long time ago. And it's not a bad thing to want to update them.
So I know we don't have too much time, but I'd like love to just geek out about some of the other awesome bills that were passed this year.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You know, so one, our very own Assembly member David Chu worked on AB 829 and AB 2162. And these bills combined do two amazing things. One, it gets rid of this aldermanic privilege for okaying building housing for people experiencing homelessness. So right now, it's really great. Like Los Angeles agreed to tax themselves in order to fund permanent supportive housing. But that very initiative required the affirmative approval of the local city council member where the housing would be built. So they have the money, but they can't get the approval to actually build the housing.
It's like a microcosm for California.
Yeah, right. Kind of. This bill nixes that. It overrides that provision, as well as brings by right supportive housing in areas that are multifamily or mixed use. So it's going to be a lot easier to start tackling the homeless crisis in California with these two bills. So three cheers for David Chu and some of our daily, who we also work with on.
Yeah, and these will be bills that will become really important when, you know, this kind of building on the West Side that we talk a lot about and building in the South and Peninsula in the San Francisco Bay Area, that once we upzone for multifamily, then it means we can also be building capital A, affordable housing, supportive housing, all of that kind of housing that people say they really want. And sometimes they say it's the only kind of housing they want, and then they make it zoned single family home only. So this means that kind of housing will be built in exclusionary communities when we upzone them, which we will.
It'll also motivate cities to like have services in every neighborhood. You know, the other argument that we hear a lot is, well, you can't build a supportive housing out here. There's only services in this other neighborhood, not here. And like if it's by right, you know, if you're just allowed to build it out there, then it'll be easier to relocate or augment the services there.
Definitely.
So let's chat about SB 828 as well. When Senator Wiener wasn't busy fighting to save the internet from the Trump administration, and he did with passing net neutrality, he also got done with SB 828. This bill strengthens the RENA, the Regional Housing Needs Allocation or Assessment, depending on its context, system that says that local governments need to zone for a certain amount of high-density housing, depending on population and job projections. And so this bill strengthens that, which means that over time, more cities will fall under the SB 35 provisions. Because like right now, his streamlining bill, SB 35, only applies for market-rate homes if a local government is below their market-rate target. The problem is, in our current RENA cycle, because of they're based on Great Recession targets, they're obscenely low. And so many cities are technically exceeding their market rate housing, even though they're not by any reasonable measure.
And SB 35 applies to affordable housing too.
Correct.
Right? Yeah.
And Meta, right? I mean, like right in
San Francisco. I'm really proud of them. It's a great project. It's getting fast forwarded. You know, you're welcome.
No, and good on them for using a law that they fought. in that same vein with sort of these interlocking laws, the only really big SB 35 market rate project that we've seen is the Valco Mall project, which people may have heard about in Cupertino because there are some quality tweets coming out of those hearings. I mean, just beautiful Twitter, housing Twitter. Oh my God. And Better Cupertino, the organization that's been fighting to say malls are coming back, like just beautiful public comment. I mean, just another level.
Should send them a thank you note, maybe. I feel like the content coming out of Cupertino is unparalleled.
So many followers when I just tweet what people say at hearings in Cupertino.
You know, I mean, like for all like the great hot content, and there is indeed a lot of that coming out of Cupertino, it really just warms my YIMBY heart thinking about all of these low-income kids that are going to be able to go to excellent public schools in Cupertino because of SB 35.
Definitely.
So I also just like really wanted to like put in a plug for AB 686 by Miguel Santiago. This was on the first five bills that the YIMBYs lobbied for in Lobby Day last year. It incorporates the protections the Obama administration worked on to affirmatively further fair housing that the Trump administration has since rescinded. This was a real sleeper bill publicly, and how it's going to play on the ground is pretty uncertain. It's going to allow HCD, the California Department of Housing and Community Development, as well as public interest nonprofits like CARLA, to start suing if local governments are not affirmatively furthering fair housing. So this could end up being a very important bill in terms of getting exclusionary communities to change their ways.
Nice. Awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it does open the door. One of the things I've heard a lot is that it opens the door for kind of creative lawsuits, which I think, you know, we do need creative lawsuits because all of our exclusionary zoning was passed at that time explicitly. You can read in the newspaper that it was designed to keep minorities out of communities. And so the fact that it's still on the books is pretty embarrassing for all of us. And yet we've come up with all these other reasons that we say single family home only zoning is, you know, is the moral thing for America or something. And now we're looking at this possibility of saying, like, maybe we could sue about it.
Yeah, I mean, I really recommend all of our followers check out the 1915 edition of the Berkeley Civic Bulletin, where they discussed this newfangled technology, zoning, which Berkeley then adopted in 1916, the same year New York adopted zoning.
So another fantastic density bonus law was passed. Brian, talk about that.
So yeah, SB 1227 by housing hero State Senator Nancy Skinner of the East Bay. This bill would allow the density bonus law to also apply to student housing. So like right now, like a lot of California students are really struggling with housing affordability. 10% of CSU students are experience homelessness in any given year. It's a real challenge. So this law would give the same density bonuses that you get for low income housing, as long as it's 100% student housing and 20% of the students are low income.
Awesome. All of these laws, which are important step forwards, are literally only possible because we are increasingly electing pro-housing legislators. And I want people to understand that, like, all of this is coming because we are changing the conversation and we are establishing that there is a voting bloc that will cheer for people like Nancy Skinner when she passes laws like this. And so we'll wrap it up. And I just want to say, get out there and canvass for pro-housing candidates. Share the endorsements. We are pointing to and linking to on our page endorsements for the South Bay, the East Bay. Get them out there and put them in the hands of your friends. Move votes. You have the ability to change minds, to get 10 more dollars donated to a campaign that will be pro-housing. And that's it for today.